Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Starting chapter 2. Yeah, we have extras here. Anybody else need a chapter 2? Yeah, just hand them out here. Okay, this is entitled The Lord in the Heart, description of, by Shukadeva Goswami, on how to meditate on the Super Soul. Okay. Those who, even the gross materialists who were meditating on the universal form, if they're successful, they'll become sufficiently purified that they can finally understand that God has a spiritual body and that He's actually residing inside our own heart. So for the benefit of such graduates from the material meditation, this meditation on the Lord of the Heart is now being described. Let's read the first verse. Shishuka uvacha evam bhavara dharanayatma yonir nashtam smitim pratyavarudya tushtat tatasa sarjena mamoga drishtir yatapyayat prag javasaya buddhihi. Shishukadev Goswami said, formerly, prior to the manifestation of the cosmos, Lord Brahma, by meditating on the Virat Roop, regained his lost consciousness by appeasing the Lord. Thus he was able to rebuild the creation as it was before. The verse only says, dharanaya, by meditation. But evam dharaya, dharanaya, by meditating in this way. So that's the way that was just described, by meditating on the universal form. So Brahma's not a gross materialist, but his service was to create the universe. So the best way to plan for that was to meditate on the supreme form from which the universe expands, all the different planets and all the different species of life emanate from the universal Virat Roop. So Brahma meditated on this Virat Roop, and that gave him the intelligence to create the universe. Okay, he regained his lost intelligence. We'll read text 2. Shabdasya hi brahmana esha panta yannama birdhyayati dir apartai paribrahmam statra navindatirtan maya mayeva sadayashayanaha. The way of presentation of the Vedic sounds is so bewildering that it directs the intelligence of the people to meaningless things like the heavenly planets. The conditioned souls hover in dreams of such heavenly, illusory pleasures, but actually they do not relish any tangible happiness in such places. So it's necessary, before you can be an adhikari, a fit candidate for beginning meditation on the pure transcendental super soul, you've got to become detached from all material conceptions, including the attachment to the benefits derived from meditating on the universal form. It's described in the 15th chapter of the Gita, how there's a tree that represents material existence, upside-down banyan tree. Urdhva mulam adhakshakam ashvatam vahuravya. This is the eternal tree of existence, because even though the existence is periodically created, destroyed, and recreated, the total material nature is eternal. Prakriti is eternal. just that there's repeated manifestation and then dissolution of the creation from Prakriti. And the whole creation is like an upside down tree. But that tree is also the desire tree of the Vedas. What does it say? Adas chordva prasvita tashashaka. The tree has its roots up, but it also has roots going down, it has branches going up, very complex. And the leaves of the tree are the Vedic hymns. Guna pravita. So, actually what the life of that tree is the guidance of the Vedas. There are all sorts of desires that the different living entities have. And they take different positions in the material world to fulfill those desires. And it's the Vedas that give the direction how to fulfill those desires. At least for the intelligent beings. The unintelligent beings, they're directed by instinct. The animals. But who organizes, who designs the instinct, the genetic plan of the animal, dumb animals? That's the demigods, superhuman, highly intelligent beings. So, and the demigods are being guided by the instructions of the Vedas. The Vedas, the demigods are doing their service as sacrifice. And how to do sacrifice is explained in the Vedas. So the demigods, everything the demigods know, they learn from the Vedas. And the more intelligent class of human beings also are engaged in Vedic sacrifice and living according to the guidance of the Vedas. And that just leaves out the unintelligent human beings and the animals. But their life is also being directed by the more intelligent beings. So actually the Vedas are providing all the intelligence for everybody's activities. And this whole desire tree of existence, which is equivalent to the universal form, is connected with the Vedas. The Vedas provide the intelligence to fulfill all these different desires. But someone who wants to progress to spiritual meditation on the Supersoul, who wants to come in contact with the Supreme, someone who wants to connect his life with the Supreme Soul, has to put aside all of these material attachments, including attachments to the pious works of Vedic sacrifice. Therefore, Shukadeva is here encouraging renunciation, vairagya, renunciation of all fruits of material work, including the most pious Vedic sacrificial work. So he says in the second verse, this path of the Shabda Brahma, Shabda Brahma means the Vedas, is speaking flowery words, encouraging people to go after goals that are just empty names, like heaven, Swarga Loka. So what? It's just a place where you get a higher grade of ordinary sense gratification. And there's still birth, death, disease, old age. So therefore, the Vedas fill one with ideas of swarga and other enjoyments, and they're all void of any real substantial value. It's all maya. And somebody who thinks that these endeavors are really causes of happiness, he's like someone foolishly dreaming, daydreaming, and just watching some hallucination. He's wandering around aimlessly from one species to another, one planet to another, and he doesn't achieve the goals he's aiming for. He may be able to go to all different kinds of planets and take birth as a demigod, as a rishi, whatever he wants to be, but ultimately his desires are not fulfilled. He can't find happiness that's pure, that's faultless. Okay, text 3. Atakavir namasu yavadartha syara pramato vyavasaya buddhihi sithe nyatarte nayate tatra parishramam tatra samikshamanaha. For this reason, the enlightened person should endeavor only for the minimum necessities of life, while in the world of names. He should be intelligently fixed and never endeavor for unwanted things, being competent to perceive practically that all such endeavors are mere hard labor for nothing. So, whether you're a jnani and you want knowledge and you want to get liberation, or maybe you're a Vaishnava, a devotee of the Supreme Lord, no matter which of those two categories you belong to, you should reject the attitude of the karmis as just materialistic, as of no real value. Well, someone may say, well, does that mean that we should just stop all activity and just give up our existence and die immediately? Should we do that? And Shukadeva is answering no here. A kavi, someone who has some practical wisdom, he should continue living in this world, but he should involve himself with the superficial designations of material existence only as much as necessary, just to keep his body and soul together, to keep himself peaceful and be able to function. And he should be apramatta, not deluded. He shouldn't be, even if he's taking a minimum quota of sense gratification he's accepting, he should be very careful not to become attached even to that minimum sense gratification. Even that he has to accept in a very detached mood. And Vishwanath Chakravarti also tells us, he should be vyavasaya buddhi, fixed determination. That means he should not give up his determination to continue his spiritual practices, no matter what kind of obstacles he has to face. Parishramam tatra samikshamana. He sees that everybody else is making so much useless endeavor, struggling so hard. He should see with some intelligence that enjoyment comes automatically by the reactions of your past karma without special endeavor. That will be described in the next verse. So let's read text 4 and 5. Satyam shitao kim kashipo prayasire bahao swasite upabahanai kim satyam jalao kim purudana patriya digval kaladao sati kim dukulai. When there are ample earthly flats to lie on, what is the necessity of cots and beds? When one can use his own arms, what is the necessity of a pillow? When one can use the palms of his hands, what is the necessity of varieties of utensils? And when there is ample covering, or the skins of trees, what is the necessity of clothing? So Shukadeva Goswami again is speaking from his heart. This is the kind of life that is attractive to him, of very severe austerity, simplicity. Now, Parikshit Maharaj may have some doubts about this, about going to these extremes. He's saying, you know, if the directions are available, you can dress yourself in the directions, which means to go around naked. Or maybe you can find some tree bark, pull some bark off a tree, and cover yourself with that. So Parikshit may be a little doubtful about that. Therefore, Shukadev even more strongly speaks the next verse. Chirani kim pati nasanti dashanti bhiksham naivangripa paribhitak saritopya shushyan vudha gira kimajito vatinopasannan kasmad bhajanti kavayo dhanadurmadandan. Are there no torn cloths lying on the common road? Do the trees which exist for maintaining others, no longer give alms in charity? Are the rivers being dried up, no longer supply water to the thirsty? Are the caves of the mountains now closed? Or above all, does the Almighty Lord not protect the fully surrendered souls? Why then do the learned sages go to flatter those who are intoxicated by hard-earned wealth? So Parikshit might be asking, you're telling dress yourself in the directions. That means going around naked. And if you don't make some endeavor, how are you going to find some food, water, some place to stay? And Parikshit, Shukadev simply, not very patiently, answers him that the trees, the rivers, the caves, they can provide for you. But what if we can't find any trees, river, or caves? Doesn't the Supreme Lord protect his devotees? Shukadev is starting to lose his patience. After hearing all this, Parikshit asks, if it gets cold, how can you protect yourself? And then Shukadev gets a little angry. And he says, look, the trees give food freely. Human beings aren't so generous. Food, freely. Pick up fruit right off the tree. It's not so easy to get donations from human beings. And Parikshit still asks, he's still doubtful. But don't you have to look around to find some water to drink? And according to Vishnu Chakravarti, Shukadev then says, damn your intelligence, you're so smart. Have the rivers dried up? And then Parikshit says, there might be a hailstone. I might start hailing. Hail. Hailstorm, yeah. And then Shukadev says, yeah, but the caves are still there. And then Parikshit says, if I go in a cave, there might be a tiger and he might eat me. And the answer to that is, doesn't Lord Hari protect his devotees? He's the soul, super soul of everybody, including the tigers. So he's Bhakta Vatsala, very compassionate to his devotees. He won't inspire the tiger to eat you up. Okay. That would be text 6. Evam svachitte svata eva siddha atma priyarto bhagavan anantaha tam nivritto niyatarto bhajeta samsara hetur uparamascha yatra. Thus being fixed, one must render service unto the Supersoul situated in one's own heart by his omnipotency. Because he is the Almighty Personality of Godhead, eternally unlimited, he is the ultimate goal of life, and by worshipping him, one can end the cause of the conditioned state of existence. So, to enter this transcendental process of meditating on the Supersoul, you have to become first renounced. You have to give up your attachment to material goals. Okay, accepting that, now Shukadev has chastised Parikshit, and Parikshit says, okay, I surrender. What should I do? What should somebody do? And the answer is, you should start serving the Supreme Personality of God, Hari. Parikshit may doubt, but then the yogi has to look around to find some paraphernalia to use for performing the worship. And the answer is no. First of all, you don't have to go find a deity. You don't have to go to Lloyd Bazaar and purchase a deity or have one made in Jaipur. The Supreme Supersoul is sitting in your heart. He's readily available. You don't have to go looking for him. You don't have to establish some deity. He's Vasudev. Lord Vasudev, the presiding deity of consciousness. And therefore, unlike most deities of the Lord, you don't have to perform an installation ceremony. You don't have to, when you begin the worship, invite him to appear and go through so many rituals. Without installing, he's ready for worship. And the process of serving him is not mechanical, not ritualistic. Atma priya arto. He should be the object of your affection. So the proper meditation on the Supersoul is a matter of spontaneous attraction and love. Priya. And he's not like some ordinary material object of love, like some father or son, who you may be very fondly attracted to, but there's always some fault in that relationship. But he's anartha. There's nothing faulty in one's relationship with the Supersoul. No contamination in that relationship. And he's not only the Supersoul, but he's also Bhagavan, which means that he's personally present, and he's manifesting his personal qualities of beauty and other all attractive qualities. He's also Ananta. So there's no limit, there's no restriction about where you can find him or where is the proper place to worship him. He's everywhere, so you can worship him anywhere. And there's no very terrible labor involved in worshiping. It's not such a terrible task. Actually, by engaging in this worship, one becomes nirvita, full of delight. One becomes very satisfied and merged in the ecstasy, the ananda of worship, of bhajan. Niyatarta, but one should have a very fixed goal. One should be very clear about what his goal is. And that, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti, the immediate goal of the yogi who's practicing this devotional meditation should be to attain love of God. And in another sense, this fixed determination means he has to take his sadhana very seriously. He should think, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti, I have so many rounds to chant, I have so much Krishna katha I should be listening to, I have to offer so many obeisances, I have to spend so much time meditating. He should plan out and be very careful about not neglecting his sadhana. Okay. And then samsara hetu paramascha yatra. Cha also, as a side benefit of this meditation which leads to love of God, you also get free from the cycle of birth and death. For the devotees, for the Vaishnavas, liberation is just a secondary result. Love of God is the primary goal. But since this meditation, this is still, if I'm right, Bhakti Mishra Yoga. But we're getting a stronger dose of bhakti now, but it's still primarily yoga. So some of the practitioners of this, what is being described now by Shukadeva, some of them are proper devotees, and some of them are still impersonalists, who are getting a little bit involved in devotion. So for the impersonalists, the gyanis and the yogis, that enticement of liberation is their primary goal. That's what they're aiming for. They haven't yet replaced that with love of God as their goal. Okay, let's read text 7. Kas tam tvanadritya paranu chintam Vite pashun asatim nama kuryat pashanjanam patitam vaitaranyam swakarma jhan paritapan jushanam. Okay. To confirm the value of this meditation on the Supreme Person and the aim of loving, of developing love of God, the other ideas of what might be spiritual practice of being condemned in this verse. People who disregard this transcendental meditation and have some other idea of progressive life, they are no better than animals. Pashun. Because their intelligence is spoiled. It's made dull by their attachment to fruitive work and sense gratification. The Vedas, the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, speaks in the same tone, the same very blunt tone. It says, Yata Pashur Evayam Sadevanam. The person who is attached to the mere rituals, he's like the animal who's serving the demigods. He's like the beast of burden for the demigods. He's an animal. Yes, he's serving the demigods, performing sacrifice, but he's a fool. It has no good intelligence. Mentioned here is Vaitarani River. The actual Vaitarna River is the river, is like the moat surrounding the domain of Yamaraj. So when you come to the gate of Yamaraj, you cross over that river. Not an auspicious river to cross. And material existence like that, entrance into material existence is like crossing over the Vaitarani River. Metaphorically. So this, with this verse, we end the discussion of Vairagya, which is the preliminary, it's a prerequisite for this meditation. You have to develop strong detachment from all material engagements. And then, from verse 8 through 13, we describe how to meditate on Lord Hari as the super soul in the heart. Verse 8? Any questions at this point? Yeah. That's Viraja. That's a different river. Vaitarani is actually the river surrounding Yamaraj's city. Yeah. Okay. Viraja is the river at the outer shell of the universe. Viraja, yeah. Yeah. Yes, bro. You have to go beyond all the shells of the universe. You get to the final covering of the universe, the covering of Prakriti, or Pradhan. And outside of that is the Viraja River, which is spiritual water. And it's actually non-different from the causal ocean. If you're in Vaikuntha looking down, like the causal ocean looks like a blob, like a sphere. But if you're in the universe looking out, it looks like a membrane surrounding the universal shells. So it looks like a river from the inside looking out. It's the same thing as the causal ocean. Yes? Yeah, this is not Brahma's first time he's created. He's waking up, some morning. It's like we wake up every morning. We have to go through the same business every morning, brush our teeth and go to Mangalarti. So Brahma wakes up every morning and he has to create the universe again. It's just another day for Brahma. Yes. Yes. Oh, but that's described later on in the second canto. In chapter 9, how Brahma didn't know what to do. He's sitting there on the lotus flower looking around the darkness, and he had some remembrance. He's supposed to create some universe or something, but he didn't know how to proceed, any idea what to do. And Lord Vishnu gave him some help. Without appearing visibly, two syllables were vibrated and he heard them. Tapas. And tapas, austerity. So he started performing austerity. And on the strength of that austerity, he remembered what to do. Okay? It's like that example of, temple president telling the cook, make a feast. And if he's an expert cook, he just has to hear those three words. He doesn't have to be told step by step how to make oliva. So Brahma, as soon as he heard tapas, it clicked in his mind and he started to remember what to do. Okay. The essence is hearing instructions from the transcendental source, from the bona fide spiritual authority. And that awoke in his memory. That's how real education works. Is that a potent teacher, just by his speaking, awakens the memory in the heart of the child or the student. Okay? The word educate in Latin means to pull something out of somebody. To extract. Is to extract the memory, to wake up the memory. Okay. I look at text 8. Kechit svadehanta hridayavakashe pradesha matram purusham vasantam
chaturbhujam kanjaratanga shankha dadadadam dadanaya smaranti.
Others conceive of the personality of Godhead residing within the body, in the region of the heart, and measuring only 8 inches, with 4 hands, carrying a lotus, a wheel of a chariot, a conch shell, and a club, respectively. So, this is very similar to the description of the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, the famous section called the Dahara Vidya, the meditation on the space in the heart. So, the heart is in the body, although we're not talking about the physical organ, we're talking about this subtle region of the heart. In that heart, there's a special space, like a sky. There's a sky inside the heart. The supreme, the supersoul lives inside that spiritual sky in the heart. And he's the size of Pradesha. That's between your thumb and your pointing finger. The distance. It's relative to how big you are. So, if you're an ant, you got a little supersoul. And if you're an elephant, you got a big one, depending on how big this, your finger and your two fingers are from each other. If you have fingers. Or some equivalent. The supersoul is like that. He assumes the size, the relative size of the creature he's inhabiting. And he's meditated on in the heart. Now, it says, Kachit, some people conceive. This is not the only way to meditate. It's not the only way to approach the Supreme. But it's one authorized process. This is meditation in particular on the Vyashti Antaryami, or the Supersoul individually seated in your own heart. That's Kshiradakshaya Vishnu. There's also the method of meditation on the external Supersoul of the whole universe, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, the Supersoul of the Virat Rupa. We were meditating before on the body of the Virat Rupa, but then you can graduate to meditation on the Supersoul, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. That's described elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, particularly in the third canto, chapters 8 and chapters 6 and 8 of the third canto. This is called Garbhodakshay or even Hiranyagarbha meditation. Okay. Kachid, Vishnu Chakravarti says, these are certain special yogis. They're certainly superior to the meditators on the gross material universal form. But that meditation on the universal form is suitable, it's useful to make someone qualified for this higher meditation on the supersoul by becoming purified in one's heart. Now there's four kinds, Vishwanath Chakravarti gives us an explanation here that there are 4 kinds of yogis who practice meditation. Number one, they're the category of those who do not take seriously the idea that the Supreme has a personal form. And they are also focusing, they're working to concentrate their vital air and their mind and intelligence and senses, but for impersonal goal. These yogis are not approved of by the Bhagavatam or by Shukadev Goswami. He doesn't speak of them favorably. Not approved. They're not, you know, described favorably. Not recommended process. It's impersonal meditation. Yes, asamata. Disapproved. The second category is those who have already performed the meditation on the gross material, the Virat Rupa. Their minds have been purified, and now they're meditating on the total supersoul of the universe, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. They're described later on in the third canto. And then the third category are the ones described here. They've performed the Virat meditation, they've become purified, and now they're trying to meditate on the supersoul inside their own heart. Lord Vishnu with 4 arms and other personal features. Then the fourth kind of yogi are the pure devotees. Their hearts are already completely pure, and they're just spontaneously attracted to the Supreme Person. Well, the personality of Godhead in his original form or in his pastime incarnations. Narayana Kala.
Yes, Krishna and his expressions, yeah.
Yes, you see that the size of the Quran is dependent on the what you want. So this size of 8 inches is a number of human beings.
That's human scale, yes. Yeah, so that's just Prabhupada's translation. The verse doesn't say 8 inches. The verse says the span between the thumb and the first finger. That's relative. And Prabhupada's just translating that into human dimension, eight inches. Depends on how big your hand is, too. Yes. This book. Sorry. Maharaj, please.
Inches, foot, yards, this is measurements. That's relative.
Yes. The foot was how big your foot was. So they standardized it just for economic purposes. Just, you know, okay, please.
What is the description of the size of
Angushtamatram. It says Angushtamatram too. I remember reading the commentary not a few weeks ago that it's explained by one of the commentaries that really means not the height of the thumb, but again, the distance between the thumb and the first finger. It's the same thing. It's just called thumb size. It was Krishna who entered, but he took on four arms. So it's Krishna playing the role of the super soul in that case, entering the womb of Uttara. Yes?
So actually, our Paramahansa is bigger than their arms.
It's supposed to come out the size of the heart.
And
yeah.
What is the size of the soul?
Of which? The soul? The size of the soul is much smaller. The size of the small soul in material existence is 1/10,000th, the tip of a hair, which is a few angstroms. You know, it's very small, atomic size, or subatomic size. Okay, so even in that situation, God's a lot bigger than us. Okay, one more question, then we'll move on.
Is the Brahma
yes, the atoms are also, in a sense, living beings. Otherwise, the Paramatma wouldn't be there. It's explained by Haridas Thakur when he was talking with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was worried, what if, you know, when you were chanting in Jayakanda Forest, didn't everybody get liberated in the whole universe? And Lord Chaitanya said, yes, you're right. The universe was depopulated. But then, there are other living entities who are waiting to take bodies. There's a waiting list. And that's the living entities who are sitting inside the atoms. They're dormant, sleeping living entities in each atom. And they're allowed to sit inside atoms waiting to get a more useful body. So there are living entities there. That's why the supersoul is there. But they're completely dormant, asleep. Yeah, there are enough living entities to go around that some of them have no place else to go but to sit inside some atom. Yeah, supersoul is there to accompany the living entities. Yes. Living entities are everywhere. They're all over the place. We don't see how many there are. We think the human beings are predominant, but the human beings are a very small minority. There's how many bacteria on the tip of one finger. Millions. Even so in this room, we think, well, you know, we're all human beings in here. But no, the human beings are a tiny minority. Okay? Okay, let's go on to text 9. Prasanna vaktram nalanaya tekshinam kadamba kinjalka pishanga vasasam lasan maharatna hiranmayangadam Spuran Maharatna Kirita Kundalam.
His mouth expresses his happiness. His eyes spread like the petals of a lotus, and his garments yellowish like the saffron of a kadamba flower are bedecked with valuable jewels. His ornaments are all made of gold, set with jewels, and he wears a glowing headdress and earrings. Going back to the last verse, it says he's Purusha. So he's, even though he's a very small little thing, he's appearing in a human-like form, or a personal form at least. He does this by his inconceivable potencies. And actually, it's stated in the third canto, 8th, 28th chapter, he appears via Sikaishori. And Vishnu Chakravarti explains that means he appears like a 15-year-old youth, the Supersoul. Vayasi, he's in the Kaishura age. And Vishnu Chakravarti said that means that the Supersoul is 15 years old. Okay. Let's look at text 10.
Unnidra vidpatkaja karnikalaya yogeshvara stapita pada pallavam Sri Lakshanam calls to Bharatna Kandaram Amlana Lakshmiya Vanamalaya Chitam.
His lotus feet are placed over the whorls of the lotus-like hearts of great mystics. On his chest is the Kaustubha gem, engraved with a beautiful calf. And there are many jewels on his shoulders. His complete torso is garlanded with fresh flowers. He's seated on the hearts of the Yogeshwaras. We should meditate on that fact. And Vishwanath Chakravarti says that means that we shouldn't only meditate on the Lord, we should meditate on the Yogeshwaras, his devotees also. And he's got this Kaustubha gem. It's not pinned onto his, or glued onto his chest. It's hanging by a golden thread from his shoulder. And around his, like his collarbone, dangles down to about his collarbone, like that. And a golden thread.
Okay, 11 and 12. Vibhushita mekalayanguliya kair mahadanayar nupada kankanadi bihi snignamala kunchita nila kuntalayar virochamana nanahasa peshalam.
He is well decorated with an ornamental wreath about his waist and rings studded with valuable jewels on his fingers. His leglets, his bangles, his oiled hair, curling with a bluish tint, and his beautiful smiling face are all very pleasing. In text 12.
Adira lila hasitaikshanola sad, vrubanga sangsuchata buryanugraham, iksheta chintamayamedam ishwaram, yavanmano dharana yavatishtate.
The Lord's magnanimous pastimes and the glowing glancing of his smiling face are all indications of his extensive benedictions. One must therefore concentrate on this transcendental form of the Lord as long as the mind can be fixed on him by meditation. So, the question may be, how long are you supposed to keep on meditating? And the answer is, keep on going as long as you can. Yeah. If you practice, it may not be possible to meditate 24 hours a day, but you spend as much time as you can focusing your attention, remembering the Lord. Okay, 13.
Ekai kushongani dianu bhavayet padhariyava dasitam gadabitaha jitam jitam stanam apoya dharayet param param shudyati diryata yata.
The process of meditation should begin from the lotus feet of the Lord and progress to his smiling face. The meditation should be concentrated on the lotus feet, then the calves, then the thighs, and this way higher and higher. The more one's mind becomes fixed on the different parts of the Lord, one after another, the more the intelligence becomes purified. Or literally, it says, you should meditate on the limbs one after another, beginning with the feet, up to the smile. And as you conquer, it says, each place, you should put it aside and move on to the next one. That's what it says, literally. And the explanation is that jitam.
conquering different limbs of the Lord means that you can meditate with proficiency to the point that it's not hard to focus on a particular limb. That meditation on his knee or whatever comes easy to you. Then you're ready to move up to the next part. Shujiti dir, the intelligence is thus gradually becoming purified. That means you're giving up your hankering for sense gratification as you're practicing this meditation. It's wanton, eagerness to enjoy material things, giving that up. The more you can become purified, the more intensely you can meditate. Yata yata. To the degree you're purified, that degree you can meditate deeply. So, this means if somebody has a very impure mind, then he's not ready for this meditation. He should just practice Virat Root meditation. He won't be able to fix his mind. He can try, but he won't be able to fix his mind on the Super Soul. No way. Okay, text 14.
Yavanna jayeta paravare smin vishveshvare drashtari bhakti yoga tavatstaviyat purushasya rupam kriyavasane payataksmarita.
Unless the gross materialist develops a sense of loving service unto the Supreme Lord, the seer of both the transcendental and material worlds, he should remember or meditate upon the universal form of the Lord at the end of his prescribed duties. So, if you make the attempt at this meditation and you really have difficulty with it, then you can go back to the Virat meditation. No damage done. You tried, then you can go back to the kindergarten and practice meditating on the universal form again. So that's what's stated in text 14. Actually, the meditation on the Virat is like an anga of this higher meditation. It's the preliminary process that leads into Super Soul meditation. He's called Vishveshvara. He's Drashtari, the seer. The Lord of all creation is not really an object that's seen, although you can see him, but he's not primarily an object. He's the seer. Because he's a pure spiritual living entity. He's not just something. And it said here, if you don't have any bhakti yoga, this is bhakti prema lakshana. This is actual love. Unless you're starting to develop love for the Lord, real attraction.
It said,
meditation, you should revert back to the grosser meditation. So therefore, somebody who really isn't ready for transcendental meditation on the Super Soul, he should every day practice meditating on the Virat Roop, and he should continue his fruitive work, his ritual duties. Kriyavasane, every day when he's finished his obligatory duties, then he should meditate on the Virat Roop. One should not give up karma until he comes to the point of bhakti yoga, actually. Krishna says that to Uddhava in the 11th canto. Tavat karma ni kurvita, nanir vidyeta karhichit, matshravanadau cha yavad shraddha na jayate. One should keep on doing prescribed ritual duties according to Varnashram system and so on, until he becomes actually detached, and especially until he develops faith and attraction for the processes of hearing and chanting about me, Krishna. That's what's described in the beginning of, no, it's before Nishtha. This is the beginning of Bhakti Yoga. The description that Rupa Goswami gives in the early chapters of Nectar of Devotion about who's the candidate for pure devotional service. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma adinavritam. So someone's given up the motivations of jnana and karma, and he's decided that he wants to give his life to the service of Krishna. he's a candidate for Shuddha Bhakti. Yes. He's a candidate to begin the process. Begin pure devotional service and put aside all mixed processes. Yes, for practical purposes, although theoretically you should not have to, just by taking shelter of the holy name and worshipping the deity, you could theoretically become perfect. But in practice, we fail to take full shelter of the opportunity, and we are stubborn about giving up our attachments. So therefore, to help us, Varnashram is then therefore given to us. Just like Prabhupada didn't come preaching Varnashram in the beginning. He said, just chant Hare Krishna, everything will work out fine. And it didn't always work out fine, so he started preaching about Varnashram. Yeah. And he first of all came and told us to chant 64 rounds. That didn't last long. And then he adjusted it to 16. And still devotees were falling down. So, you know, in the last years, Prabhupada was preaching the necessity to establish, you know, the social system to give us some support. So we can go on chanting. But it's not that Prabhupada made this up. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was preaching it. Bhaktivinoda Thakur in 1922 wrote a letter to his son saying that, you know, I'm giving you assignments, and one of them is you have to reestablish Daivi Varnashram. But Prabhupada didn't preach it in the beginning. Just like you get a new bhakti, you send him out on Sankirtan to see if he can do it. And if he can't do that, okay, you give him something else. So Prabhupada tried, just chant Hare Krishna, don't worry about anything else, and if that didn't work, then he said, okay, you can also have Varnashram. But that plan to institute it was always there. Yes. 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 ISKCON will not be able to serve and attract the whole world until we institute that. Until that's in place, until we have a supportive society, then most people are not going to be able to put up with it and put up with us and actually become members. Yeah. This is what we need to do, is to develop attachment. And that's just a paraphrase of that statement by Krishna in the 11th canto. Yeah, if we have Ruchi Asakti to Krishna Katha, then we can forget about Varnashram and everything else. We can go through the motions, but we don't have to even think about it. Yeah. I think we better continue, okay? Text 15.
Stidam sukham chasanam astito yatir yadajihasuri mamamba lokam kale chadeshe cha manona sajayet pranan niyachin manasajita suhu.
O king, whenever the yogi desires to leave this planet of human beings, he should not be perplexed about the proper time or place, but should comfortably sit without being disturbed, and regulating the life air should control the senses by the mind. So we've been talking about, the question was, what do you do when you're faced with death? Now we're getting down to it. When you're ready to leave your body, what are you supposed to do? This is described in 4.5 verses, text 15 through 18, half of 18. First of all, you should give up attachment. Don't be attached to finding an auspicious place or an auspicious time, some holy tirtha, or wait until the sun is going through the upper path. There's no concern for that because a yogi's success is not based on the proper time and place. They're not the causes of his success. The yoga itself, the strength of his yoga, is the cause of his success. Yes? Well, we're describing number three here. Which are describing the third, the meditator on the super soul within the heart. In this method is the method followed by that yogi.
So that person doesn't have to be concerned about
time. No. When he's, become advanced and he's about to leave his body, when he's at that state, he should put aside all consideration. Don't worry about what time and place it is. Just get about your business. Focus your attention. Yes. But the yogis who are it's the non-devotees and materialists who are concerned. Among the yogis, those who are non-devotees and are still materially contaminated, they're worried about leaving their body at the right time, the right place. Yeah, Naiti Suti, Yogi Janan. Parta Janan, Yogi Muyata Kastana. A yogi who understands the real nature of these two different paths, he doesn't worry about them. Prana niyachin. He should control the pranas by the mind. The pranas here doesn't mean just the life air, it means the senses. He should control the senses by his life airs. They're called the pranas here. Now what that means is he should merge the senses in their control of the mind. The senses should all offer their functions back to the mind. They shouldn't be acting independent anymore, just going off in all directions. They should just very subserviently serve the dictates of the higher direction of the mind. In that sense, merge back into the mind. Okay, then text 16. Manak swabudhya malaya niyamya kshetragya etam ninayetam atmani atmanam atmanya varudya dhiro labdopa shantir virameta kvitriyat. Thereafter the yogi should merge his mind by his unalloyed intelligence into the living entity and then merge the living entity into the super self. By doing this, the fully satisfied living entity becomes situated in the supreme stage of satisfaction. So that he ceases from all other activities. So now the yogi is ready to give up all karma. When he's progressed up to the point of being ready to properly leave his body, then okay, no more karma, no more prarabdha karma. Now the mind is normally the captive, the slave of sense objects. But you have to use your determined intelligence to focus the mind on the super soul alone. And when you've accomplished that, then you can take your intelligence and focus that exclusively on the pure self, or the self, your individual self, as the seer of material existence. Now that's your material identity. You should take that material identity and put that back into your pure identity. Instead of meditating on yourself as the witness of the material world, put that aside and revive your understanding of your true spiritual identity. That's merging the self into the self. And then you merge the self into the Supreme Brahman. Now, the Mayavadis grab at that idea. Sugadeva is really talking Advaita Vad. They think this. They read the Bhagavatam. And after reading all of it, they conclude that the ultimate teaching of the Bhagavatam is merging into the Supreme. And all this talk about the personality of Godhead is just secondary. Ultimately, the Supreme is impersonal. And they can see that even in the Bhagavatam. And Shukadeva throws out a few bait for them to nibble on. Let them become bewildered if they want to. Like this statement. Merge into the self, but it's not the impersonal self. And then labdopa shanti, attaining upashanti, total satisfaction. The yogi at this point is satisfied because there's nothing else for him to achieve in the material world. He's finished all his material business. He has no other duty than to continue his meditation. No other obligations. Okay, text 17. Nayatra kalo nimasham parak prabhu kutono deva jagatam ya ishire nayatra satvam na rajas tamascha navai vikaro namahan pradhanam. In that transcendental state of labdopa shanti, there is no supremacy of devastating time, which controls even the celestial demigods who are empowered to rule over mundane creatures.
And what to speak of the demigods themselves? They have no control. Nor is there the mode of goodness, nor passion, nor ignorance, nor even the false ego, nor the material causal ocean, nor the material nature. Okay, there's two different results you can get by this meditation. You can merge into the Supreme, impersonal Supreme, or you can attain Vaikuntha by this particular meditation. It depends. It depends what your interest is. If you're okay, in either case, these are yogis, gyanis. They're trying to understand the Supreme by their meditation. But are they using this element of devotion, attention turned toward the Supreme Person in his personal form? Are they just using it to merge into the Supreme? Or are they becoming actually seriously attracted to the personality of Godhead in his devotional service? If the devotion becomes prominent, then they can attain Vaikuntha. If they hold on to their impersonal goals, then they're going to just get merging into the Supreme. Example of the second kind of yogi who attained Vaikuntha is Ajamil. After he was freed from the Yamadutas, he went to practice meditation, but he attained Vaikuntha. We hear a little bit about the nature of Vaikuntha in these verses, that there's no force of time, there's no influence of time there, or of the modes of nature. Yes.
So, is that stage and
which one?
The
Lopa Shanti. Yes. Well, literally the word means having attained full satisfaction, but that logically implies no more material motives. But it's like a zero point. You've eliminated the material desires, but you haven't yet cultivated the spiritual desires. It's like something is, you throw a rock up in the air, it goes up, and then it stops for a moment, and then it comes down. So the point of zero acceleration, before it turns around and starts coming down, that's what this point is, Lubdoshanti point. The material acceleration is stopped. The spiritual acceleration hasn't really started yet. Yes? It's a compound. Lubda, having obtained. Upashanti means, it means cessation of desire, or pacification, or satisfaction. Okay? From sham, shanti, shanti. Sham means to quiet down, or to become peaceful. Yes? Full bliss. Okay. But that's the bliss of Brahman. Yeah, Brahmananda. Because we haven't reached the final goal yet. We're still, the yogi's just about to burst out of his head, but he has more distance to travel. He's got to go through the other end of the universe still. He got only halfway through the chapter. So he's not done yet. He's still in the material world. He's leaving his body, but he's still in the material world. And now he's going to travel with his subtle body. He's got subtle desires still. This is an amazing chapter because it's tracing the progress from the grossest, total material consciousness up to final liberation, step by step. And we the graphic picture of the yogi leaving his body and then passing out of the universe, one planet by another planet. This is Krama Mukti. Well, we'll get to the last verse of the chapter. That point is reached also. That final goal is there for those who can get that far. Let's look at verse 18.
Let me see if there's anything else here. Okay, 18. Param padam vaishnavam amadantita dhyaneti nejit ataruksu shrikshavaha isvijya dauratmyam ananya saurida viropaguyaha param pade pade. The transcendentalists desire to avoid everything godless, for they know that supreme situation in which everything is related with the Supreme Lord Vishnu. Vaishnavam padam. Therefore, a pure devotee who is in absolute harmony with the Lord does not create perplexities, but worships the lotus feet at every moment, taking them into his heart. So how can you give up all material designations? Devotees always want to know this. It's by rejecting your identification with the body, by a process of systematically negating. It's not this, I'm not this, I'm not that. You know, I'm not an enjoyer of this, I'm not a controller of that. The real business of my life is not to become famous and loved by everybody or to accumulate money in the bank. So you have to gradually negate all your material conceptions. Neti-neti. Okay, now, there was a question. Oh, there may be a question. Verse just before they said there's no mode of goodness, passion, or ignorance in the spiritual environment. So how is that possible, the question is? How can there be no influence of the modes? Because this situation is param. The spiritual position is beyond the material creation, which is the realm of the three modes. It's Vaishnavam param. It's the existence of Lord Vishnu, but it's his impersonal aspect. The Nirvishesh Swarup of Lord Vishnu. Okay, this is what we're talking about. It's called Vaishnavam Padam. We're not talking about Vaikuntha at this point. We're talking about the impersonal Brahman, which is an aspect of Lord Vishnu. Well, the Gyanis have a different idea of what this Padam is. A devotee like Narada, for him, Vaishnavam Padam is, of course, the spiritual world. But for the impersonalists, they just have an impersonal conception of it. Okay. Yes. Yes. Prabhupada's picking the pure devotee here, but we just discussed that there are two kinds of yogis involved here. There's the yogi who's still very much a Gyani, and he just wants liberation. That's all he gets. Then there's following the same process, those who are becoming devoted, and they're going to be able to go to Vaikuntha. So there's two different kinds of yogis. Yes? Yes. Everybody in Vaikuntha has prema. So giving up dauryatmyam, this bad mentality, or this corrupt mentality. And what is that corrupt mentality? The idea that the self and God are the same. That's the corrupt mentality. People, Vishnu Chakravarti says, those who think that the body of Vishnu is material in any way, they are called duratmas. Rascals. Okay. And embracing Lord Vishnu in one's heart at every moment, thinking, meditating, Vishnu is everything for us. He's the source of all our good fortune. That kind of embracing. Last word here. Oh, Ananya Saurida. Giving up friendship for anything else, anybody else. That doesn't mean becoming unfriendly to everybody, but it means that devotees don't maintain any affection for anything that's not connected to Krishna. Anybody or anything that has nothing to do with Krishna, we have nothing to do with him or it. But devotees, although all they want is to experience the transcendental existence of the Supreme Person, they just want him and nothing else. Still, They don't reject the material visible world because they understand it's all meant to be used in his service. They only want Krishna, but they accept everything because it's meant to be used in Krishna's service. Krishna Sambandhi. Okay, text 20. Now, we're going to move the life air up through the six chakras, the six vortexes, the six focuses of pranic energy from the bottom of the body up to the top. Nabhyam stitam vidya barupya tasmad udana gatyora sitam nayen muni tato nusandaya diyamanasvi svatadam talu mulam shanakaya nayeta. We skip 19. Okay, fine. Let's read 19. Itam munis tu paramed vyavastito vijnana drig virya surandita shayaha swaparshni napidya guram tato nilam staneshu shatsuna mayejita klamaha. Translation of both. By the strength of scientific knowledge, one should be well situated in absolute realization and thus be able to extinguish all material desires. One should then give up the material body by blocking the air hole through which stool is evacuated, in other words, the anus, with the heel of one's foot, and by lifting the life air from one place to another in the six primary places. Okay. And then the meditative devotee should slowly push up the life air from the navel to the heart, and from there to the chest, and from there to the root of the palate. He should search out the proper places with intelligence. Okay, I'm just looking for you. Yeah, Vivesta. Text 19. The yogi, the muni. So what does it mean to be a muni? It means to be on the Brahma-Bhuta platform. To realize I'm not this body, I'm pure spirit. And one should be fixed in that intelligence. Vyavastita. Vijnanadrig. On the strength, what is Vijnanadrig? The eye of wisdom is the eye of scriptural knowledge. His understanding is based on the authority of scripture. And that strength, the strength of that knowledge destroys all his desires for material enjoyment. Even the most subtle desires. Now he's ready to leave his body. So first of all, he has to block the lowest chakra, the Muladhara chakra, which is located near the anus, to prevent the air from going down and out the body through the anus. He blocks it with the heel of his foot. And then he can raise, now he can try to raise the prana. It won't go the wrong direction because he's blocked that passage. He starts lifting it by meditation. Then he puts it, he moves the prana up through the six places to the navel, the heart, the chest, the palate, top of the mouth, then the middle of the eyebrows, then the Brahmarudra, and then out. He says, Nabhyam Stutau, situated in the navel. That's the, third chakra, called the second chakra, the Manipurika chakra, located around the navel. Third, okay. And then up to the heart, which means the Anahata, fourth chakra, over here. And then, just below the bottom of the throat, here, I think, Vishuddha chakra. Then Svatala Mule, front part. Vishuddha chakra also extends up to the, so it's still the same chakra, but the top part of it, the front part of it. And now, Shanakaya Nayeta. Now you've got to be careful. From this point on, be careful, because you're coming up into the head, and there's all these other holes here, ears and nose. You have to be careful not to let the prana out the wrong hole. So you have to carefully guide up to the higher chakras. Shanakaya, slowly, carefully. Okay, now we're up to text 21. Tasmad, bhuvor antanam unnayeta, Nirudha saptayatano napekshaka stitva muhurtardham akunta drishtir nirbidya murdhan visvijet param gataha. Thereafter the bhakti yogi should push the life air up between the eyebrows
and then blocking the seven outlets of the life air, he should maintain his aim for going back home, back to Godhead. If he is completely free from all desires for material enjoyment, he should then reach the cerebral hole and give up his material connections, having gone back to the Supreme. Okay, so this is the sixth chakra, the Ajna chakra, between, it's located behind the eyebrows. Now he has to block the seven paths of the prana. That means his ears, his eyes, nostrils, and mouth. Make sure the prana doesn't go out of any of those. And he can, if he actually doesn't have any more material desires, then he'll be able to move the prana up through the Brahmarandra at the top of the head. And he'll leave behind his subtle body. The body and the senses will be left behind. Gross and subtle bodies. Now that is immediate liberation. If he's successful in leaving them through the top of the head and abandoning his subtle body, then he's liberated immediately. But that may not work exactly perfectly. He may still have some subtle desires. Well, I'm sorry. Desires are a quality of the self. They may be reflected in the mind, but they're actually in the soul. Yeah. They're my desires. They're not my mind's desires. They're my desires. So he's got desires. That means he's going to hold on to his subtle body. He's not ready to give it up. That's described in the next verse. Yadi prayasyan vipapada meshtyam vaihayasanam utayad viharam ashtari patyam gunasan nivaye sahaiva gachet manasindriyaischa. However, O king, if a yogi maintains a desire for improved material enjoyments, like transference to the highest planet, Brahmaloka, or the achievement of the eightfold perfections, travel in outer space with the Vaihyasas, or a situation in one of the millions of planets, then he has to take away with him the materially molded mind and senses. He's got to go with his subtle body if he has some desire left. So, therefore, now we begin the description of Krama Mukti, of gradual liberation. The yogi's left his body from one of the higher chakras, maybe out of his mouth, but now he's, or even Brahmarandra, but he hasn't let go of his subtle body, his desires, subtle desires. So he's got to do a little bit of traveling around the universe. This is called the Archiradi Marg, the path through the planets of fire, Archir, and the other elements. He's got to break out of the universe by gradual progress. No, Pitriyan is downward. Those who follow Pitriyan, they take birth again. In Devayan, they go to the heavenly planets. But this is beyond that. We're gonna go to the end of the universe, but it's gradual liberation. Okay? It's described in Vedanta Sutra. It's a process, a typical process. It's not the only way to go, but it's a typical path of gradual liberation. It's like a package tour. You go to a travel agent, and they've already have set up a 21-day tour of Europe. It's like that. There's a standard tour, on the way out to, gradual liberation tour. Yes? Yeah, the Vaihyas is, Vaihyas means the Milky Way. So it's the demigods who travel in their airplanes and have celestial airplanes to travel around in the path of the Milky Way. Kachadas, the Siddhas, those who either have airplanes or else they have mystic powers without airplanes they can fly. But in general, it's those who have the capacity to fly around throughout the heavenly sky. So the yogi joins them. He goes up and leaves his body, and he cruises around with the demigods who can fly in the sky. So if he wants to visit Brahma's abode, or the place where the siddha, the persons with mystic powers, fly around in the sky,
and where that parts of the universe where the eightfold mystic cities are automatically available to everybody. Then if he's interested in seeing these aspects of material creation, he's got to take his body and senses with him, his subtle body and his senses with him, even when he leaves his body. He needs them to enjoy these subtle material planets. He needs his subtle body. So he doesn't give it up. Okay, text 23. That's explained. Generally, he takes his subtle body, but that subtle body takes different forms. As he passes through the different planets, like the, you know, he goes through the coverings of the universe, and there's a covering of earth, a covering of fire, a covering. His subtle body takes on a subtle form, corresponding to each of those elements, like the subtle aspect of those elements. He doesn't have a gross body anymore, so there's no gross earth, water, fire, but he gets a subtle earth body, a subtle water body, and so on. It's just subtle body just takes on different forms, suitable forms. That's described in the commentaries. We'll get to that. This is text 23. Yogeshwaranam gatim ahur antar bahis trilokya pavanantaratmanam nakarma bhistam gatim apnuvanti vidya tapo yoga samadhi bhajam. The transcendentalists are concerned with the spiritual body. As such, by the strength of their devotional service, austerities, mystic power, and transcendental knowledge, their movements are unrestricted within and beyond the material worlds. The fruitive workers, or the gross materialist, can never move in such an unrestricted manner. So yogis are not restricted in their movements the way that karmis are. The yogis may be sense gratifiers, but their sense gratification is much more subtle than the sense gratification of ordinary people. They can travel wherever they want in the universe, to Mahaloka. They can even go outside the material universe sometimes. They have very subtle bodies. Take seriously the progressive paths of meditation, vidya. Vidya means meditating on different forms of the Supreme. Tapas, which here Sridhar Swami says tapas means devotional service. Devotional practices they take seriously. They understand that if you want to get out of this world, you want liberation, you have to meditate on Vishnu. That's not devotion. That's just using Vishnu for your purposes. But they know you have to meditate on Vishnu. They practice Ashtanga Yoga, and Samadhi here means Jnana. So we have Vidya Tapo Yoga Samadhi Bhajam. They seriously involve themselves in meditation, in devotional practices, in yoga discipline, and in cultivating knowledge. Okay. And then text 24. Vaishvanaram yati vihaya sagata sushumdaya brahmapatena shochisha viduta kalkota hare arudastat trayati chakram niprashai shumaram. O king, when such a mystic passes over the Milky Way by the illuminating Sushumna to reach the highest planet, Brahmaloka, he first goes to Vaishvanara, the planet of the deity of fire, wherein he becomes completely cleansed of all contaminations, and thereafter he goes still higher, to the circle of Shishumar, to relate with Lord Hari, the personality of Godhead. So this and the following verses, verses 24 to 31, describe the yogi progressively moving his way out of the universe, up to the top of the universe and out. On his way, he's heading toward Brahmaloka, and he's traveling through the sky, through the heavenly sky. First of all, he visits the presiding deity of fire. His name is Vaishvanara. And by entering the realm of fire, just like fire purifies everything it touches, you have dirty gold, you can smelt it, you can put it in fire, and the dirty parts will melt out. Similarly, the subtle body of the jiva, when passing through the Vaishvanara realm, the realm of primeval fire, his material desires are being melted also. So then he's ready to go up to the, near the top of the universe, the Shishumara Chakra, which is almost at the top of the universe. Lord Hari personally rules the Shishumara Chakra. It's actually considered a Vaikuntha realm within the spiritual world. And in the center of the Shishumara Chakra is Dhruva Maharaja's planet, which is another Vaikuntha planet. Within the Shishumara Chakra, the yogi can visit various planets. The planets of the sons of Aditi are there. Dhruva Maharaja's planet is there. He can visit all these sages and also Dhruva Maharaj. Well, it says here the Adityas, actually the sons of Aditi, the principal demigods, they have their residences up there too, in Shishumara Loka. Vaishvanara, yeah, Archir and Vaishvanara. That means the first stage of the way out, the first place he visits, the lowest one. That's the realm of fire. And Archir means fire, and Vaishvanara means fire. Same. Okay. Any last questions? Yes, Mother?
Can the Buddha has purified the material desires of the mind? This is one of how it can purify the material desires of the mind.
Well, it's not just a physical process. Otherwise, you could jump in a fire. The ruling deity of that realm, Lord, I guess it's Agni Dev. He's an elevated Vaishnav. He's a pure soul. His consciousness is pure. Vaishvanara himself and his associates. So by going to Vaishvanara Lok, by the personal association of Agni Dev and his associates, you're purified. It's not a physical process because you're not in a physical body anymore. You're in your subtle body anyway. So it's all on the mental level, if not spiritual level. The soul is traveling with his mental body now. So actually what is going on here is going and associating with, on these different levels, the beings who are on these levels of spiritual advancement. The presiding deities of the different elements. And ultimately you go to the realm of Prakriti at the very edge of the universe. And you can associate with the material energy herself. Because she's a great Vaishnava, you get benefit from her association. If you want to take this process, this is a gradual liberation. If you want to remain in the material world and see everything, you can do that. But it makes the liberation, it stalls the liberation. It takes some time to get out of the universe. It's not just a few minutes, it's ages that you spend visiting all these planets. Okay, so we can...
Our fire processes some people.
Yes. Yes. Saravatmasnapanam, that you can wash your whole existence all at once. Okay, so we can stop here. Thank you all. Glory to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.